Hi friends, and this is our, well, this is program two of the externalization of the hierarchy. I'm beginning, as you see, not exactly at the beginning because it seemed to deal with issues that are somewhat covered in other books, but I will come back and I will find them. So I think the best thing for me to do is to put that in somehow, and this will be okay. Always running into the same kind of thing. Yeah. Program 2, EXHH, and externalization of the hierarchy, and our date here is the 8th of January, 2019. And I'll try to make that, you know, I usually make that in blue so that we can differentiate it from other things. Right. And then maybe I will not write as much in this particular text. I've already gone through it to look for where the italics may be, at least in the beginning, first 50 or so pages, and that ought to carry us for quite a while. Now, I've decided to begin right at the threshold of World War II. There was a great effort in 1935 and 1936 to flood the world with goodwill, and it may be almost worked, but not quite, because according to the Tibetan, there were not sufficient disciples really to carry out that work in the strength that it needed. And maybe they did not work hard enough or take it seriously enough. I don't know, but it was not enough to stem the tide of the Axis aggression, Germany's aggression. So this particular message from the Tibetan occurs on September 28th. I think on September 30th, there was a pact signed with England and maybe some others that pretty well assured the fate of Czechoslovakia, and the Anschluss, the annexation of Austria, had occurred, I think, beginning the 12th of March, 1938. So we were already, it's interesting that this letter from the Tibetan came out, or at least was dictated to Alice Bailey, apparently, and I'm not exactly sure whether this is the time when it was published and sent to people or when it's the time that it was dictated, but it's quite close, and it's just a few days before this fateful capitulatory decision was made by England and other allies to give Hitler free hand in Czechoslovakia, would not be opposed. Finally, in 1939, with the invasion of Poland and Hitler reneging on his promises, war was declared against Germany. The Allies declared war, but not yet. So we're in a very serious situation here. We're looking at the history of the kind of movements that have developed into what we have today, some 80 years later. Well, we might think that since this book was written ending in the late 1940s, that it wouldn't have too much to say about what is transpiring now, but it's one big war, really, with the dweller on the threshold of humanity, facing off with the soul of humanity. Now, Usually things go in threes. And the war went underground after what we call World War I, the war to end all wars. But it resurfaced with vehemence in the later 1930s, and Germany used that time to rearm against the stipulations of the Versailles Treaty. Now the question is, has the war gone underground again? And is it about to reemerge? If it reemerges, will it reemerge in a psychomental way, avoiding the terrible, inevitable destruction which would occur because of the existence now of atomic weapons, which did not exist when the second phase of the Great War emerged? What does he call the Great War? 1914 to 1945. But here we are leading up to the era of 2025 and the end of the era of the Forerunner, and the battle between the forces of light, which the soul represents, and the forces of materialism or form, which the personality represents. This battle is occurring with vigor right now, and you can see it. It's still pretty much on the mental emotional plane, pretty much on the psychological level. Now, you know, our task is to keep it there, because this battle is inevitable between soul values and personal values, and a lot of clearing must be done before we can enter into the Aquarian Age in the way that Master DK says we must. Entering into the Aquarian Age with some measure of peace in the world, with some design, some pattern of sharing existing between the nations, so that this is a real tendency, not simply acquisition and taking advantage of other nations and jockeying for one's own national power, but a true sharing. And of course, you know, the house cleaning in the political and church area has certainly already begun, more so perhaps in the church area, but now I think imminently in the political area as well. So these are very demanding requirements, and we can see that we have not fulfilled them. The root of all this is, well, it really began with the First World War, which was a precipitation of this standoff between the spiritual aspects of humanity and its material aspects, and it has continued. So we have to keep the battle mental, psychological. Battle there will be, and we must engage in it with the tools that we have, the tools of understanding, of the tools of light and of love and of our acquiescence to the will of God as much as we can understand that. We are working largely meditatively behind the scenes, but we know how powerful that can be, and we must persist in that kind of work. So even though it may seem like, well, we're going back quite a ways here, remember that we're beginning here really in the emergence of the second phase of the Great War, which, according to the Tibetan, lasted until 1945, and in a way may be continuing. He warned us, you know, in that, about the parable of the man who swept his house clean of many devils. I forget if there was given a specific number, you know, 40 or something, of many devils, and then neglected the cleaned area, and then found the house reinfested by even more devils than he had swept out before. He warned us about this. And certainly we see we are bedeviled by many obstructive forces. And I don't think there can be any question now that about the fact that another attack by the forces of materialism is current and is attempting to stop humanity's proper emergence into the Aquarian Age. The Aquarian Age will occur, but look, you know, Aquarius and all the other signs can be used positively or negatively. You know, you can have atomic destruction under Aquarius. You can have mass epidemics. You can have a spreading throughout humanity of many unwholesome and obstructive conditions. You can have totalitarianism and standardization. You can have all those negative things if we are not really careful about doing the preliminary work. As I said in the introduction, we have decades of work to do before, at least in my mind, it is feasible that the Christ can reappear, because, you know, the selected aspects of the hierarchy have to appear before he does, and they have to be recognized and sought after because of their wisdom. And that's an amazing thought. So we have to build up the reputation of the ageless wisdom and make it seem truly logical and desirable and to be followed and to be understood by many of the members of the human race, and especially, let's say, those who can understand it. The intelligentsia, we have to reach the intelligentsia. We also have to reach the intelligent so-called man in the street. All right, so now let's go on. And at the very least, you know, I'll be reading these things. And if you have not recently reviewed your reading, or perhaps you were like me, this was one of the books that I read in a fairly non-systematic manner. So I know I left aspects of the reading out of my usual close reading of what the Tibetan has done. So at least it will provide a refresher for both of us. So September 28th, 1938, 2 days before the pact between England, especially Chamberlain, when I think he said, we will have peace in our time, entirely underestimating Hitler and his nefarious motives, until approximately a year later, also in September. It seems to be a good time for wars to be fought. Maybe the weather is good. The Allies declared war on Germany because of its invasion of Poland, and it became clear that Hitler would never stop. I think some of us have had experience here in this Second World War. I have the feeling that we have had, or in the First World War perhaps, and you know, it's a kind of a maybe a personal thing for us because we were there, or at least we think we were. A lot of clearing occurs in such a debacle with so many millions killed. And I've talked to many of the disciples who feel, yes, I was killed in the Second World War, they feel, or maybe the First World War, I don't know. But certainly the 20th century has been a warring century, and now we're in the 21st century, and our task in these last days of the Forerunner, these last years really, is to keep the ongoing war between the dweller and the angel of humanity on the mental, psychological level. September 28th, 1938. The hierarchy is deeply concerned over world events Indeed, so, in another few years, another 4 years or so, they would be, in a sense, packing their bags, thinking that humanity would go down to defeat. And that was not, a real abandonment that had to take place for the welfare of the planet. I am asked to request you to continue with the goodwill work at all costs and the face of all obstacles. So obviously we're dealing here with the superiors of Master DK, probably Master KH or others, because goodwill is love in action, and if anything can offset that which was imminent at that time, perhaps it was too late, I don't know, but that which was imminent, it would be the energy of love. The nucleus already formed must be preserved, as there had been much success in the goodwill initiative of 1935-36, coming out of the first stanza of the great invocation, "Let the forces of light bring illumination to mankind," and so forth. We'll be dealing with that because in this book, The Externalization of the Hierarchy, he goes through a very detailed analysis of these formulas, these great invocations, which must continue to be used, even though one might think that the great invocation had superseded them all. The new group of world servers must preserve its integrity and work undismayed by the many horrors arising before the eyes. Already concentration camps were existing, and eugenics programs, and the elimination of people who were supposedly defective in some way. So the cruelty of Nazism was already well at work, and the great armies of Germany were on display, and it was a horrific sight, given that they were not supposed to be building an army according to the stipulations of the Versailles Treaty. All is not yet lost. Now, wow, that's a statement with many implications, because it seems to suggest that indeed all could be lost. The steadiness of those who know God's plan will help humanity and will aid the efforts of the elder brothers. And so we're talking about to be a steady disciple, a steady initiate, helping to keep the plan operative and before the minds and hearts of humanity in a manner that can be understood. These individuals, and may we number ourselves among them in this current age, they are those who love and do not hate, and who work for unity, both subjective and spiritual. The subjective aspect could be looked at as the integration of the personality. The spiritual aspect could be looked at as the soul, or we can raise the estimation and say that subjectivity will be the unification of the soul with the personality, and when the word spiritual is used, it relates to that planetary view which the spiritual triad has, or at least consciousness within the spiritual triad. But the word is unity, and it's a great second-ray word. This is all I can say at this time, for hierarchy itself knows not which forces will prevail. So much is left to the free will of the human race. And that's interesting because hierarchy, with all of their prevision, had the sense in the lower interlude of 1942 that humanity would go down to defeat, and only the intervention of the Lords of Liberation in Shambhala helped to turn that around. It's a most mysterious event, and DK deals with it a little bit and says, I can't say too much about it, but apparently the massed invocation of humanity rose to those heights where the liberty, equality, and fraternity, the sort of names of these lords of liberation, where they could be reached. And they were able to deflect certain currents of thought away from the evil powers and to strengthen the forces of light. That was really the turning point of the war, even though it took a long time to work out. And we have to realize that when something happens on the higher planes, even let's say like a Shambhala impact or even like a great conclave of 2025, that the visibility of what happened may not work itself out until some years later. They know, the hierarchy knows, that good must ultimately triumph, but they do not know what the immediate future holds for humanity because men determine their own courses. Now, somewhere, I think in esoteric psychology, maybe book one, he talks about a delay that could occur. And the delay there mentioned would be for about 300 years or so. At other times, he speaks in more dire tones about the necessity to go all the way back to the beginning and found a humanity in which the good could and would finally express itself. We cannot fall into that dire possibility. We must do everything we can to prevent it from occurring. Okay, the law of cause and effect can seldom be offset. Karma is an exacting process and relentless, we might say. In those cases where it has been offset, it has required the intervention of forces greater than those available at this time on the planet. So he really lays the responsibility upon us, does he not? Because, we can think of ourselves as participating in these cataclysms. After all, where were we? Where were we at the time? Either in the body or out of the body and inclined towards spirituality. So perhaps our participation was in incarnation. Perhaps it was, in fact, in the inner worlds. But for many, many of us, I would say the participation was there. So can the determinations of man be offset? Maybe with great, great effort, and does the planet have sufficient forces available to do that? These greater forces can intervene if the world aspirants make their voices penetrate. Will this be possible? Now, this is so interesting because that's exactly what happened. The world aspirants and humanity as a whole so invoked, so implored that their voices rose to Shambhala and to the great lords of liberation, especially, I suppose, that lord who's known as Liberty. During the Aquarian Age, they will emerge. They are related to the air signs, Liberty, Aquarius, Equality, Libra, Fraternity, Gemini. Will this be possible? So already he's hinting at some kind of salvation which could come by offsetting much of the world karma that humanity had generated. The forces of destruction militating. There you see Mars, don't you? When you think of it, that's one of those planets that is really used by the forces of destruction. It's a non-sacred planet. The forces of destruction militating against the forces of good have, to use your American phrase, cornered the money assets of the world and have turned the tide of prana, which automatically crystallizes into money and in the financial wealth of the world, towards entirely material, separative, and personal ends. And is it so different today? You know, the crux of the situation which prevents the Christ from appearing is a financial one. He and the hierarchy are in need of the conventional resources, lest they too much disrupt humanity's way of doing things. The idea of some kind of a spectacular divine intervention where humanity is saved from itself is not how things are expected to go, although appropriate intervention did occur in ways that we have cannot understand and about which we have not yet been entirely informed. Okay, so there is this problem with money, and there are many people who were companies and groups that were profiteering from war. And they were happy about the war because it filled their coffers. And Nazism, fascism, was a great risk, even in such countries as the United States, which was key in determining the outcome of the war, along with, well, Russia. It was a two-front war. So within the United States, elite individuals, very, very wealthy, not caring about democracy, even sided subtly and more overtly with the German objectives. Of course, at a certain time, they had to pull back. Maybe in the 30s, they sided with the German objectives. And America First, which is now being used as a slogan, was used then, and it was meant to keep America out of the war so that the fascist powers could grow, the Nazi powers could grow. It would have been an entirely different outcome, except that great disciples were guiding the process, disciples such as Franklin Roosevelt and Winston Churchill. And we have been told that the leaders in this Second World War were the same leaders as had been found in the great Atlantean conflict, perhaps some 4 million years earlier, in the middle of the Atlantean root race. Anyway, the money has gone into the hands of the very, very wealthy, and we see tendencies toward that today. And this group will do everything it can to preserve its own wealth. It's rarely the case, although sometimes is the case, that someone emerges from this group who has the interests of humanity at heart. I guess we could maybe say, you know, that Bill Gates is one of them, and there are, you know, very, very powerful investors. George Soros is considered to be one by some, but he's hated by many, and maybe Warren Buffett in some respects. These are individuals along the third ray line, and they have seen that the welfare of humanity is more important than self-aggrandizement. Time will tell. So anyway, material, separative, and personal ends, that's what the money has gravitated towards. It is not easily available, therefore, for the spread and culture of goodwill. And this applies equally to the money which is in the hands of the aspirants, as in the hands of those who are purely selfishly minded. So it seems a great problem to loosen the hold of materiality upon money, so that it can be directed as crystallized prana towards goodwill, towards love, towards illumination, towards all of the higher possibilities that of which humanity is capable. So many aspirants have not learnt to give with sacrifice. Well, that's a big sentence, isn't it? And of course, it causes us to pause. We give maybe what is convenient to give later. Master DK says, I ask you to give until it hurts, he says. I ask you to give until it hurts. So we can judge for ourselves whether we have succeeded in fulfilling that request. If you can reach some of the financial abundance and deflect it towards the ends of the Great White Lodge, of which the Christ is the Master, it will be at this time one of the most constructive things you can do to help. So even in those days, 1938, the demand for money for good was essential, and even now it is still essential. I guess we're always being tested, and as we read the text, certain sentences will rise into our consciousness as needing our response. And the degree of our generosity with money, with time, with energy, is always being questioned before the bar of the soul. And behind it all lies the extraordinary statement, so difficult to fulfill, to those who give all is given. In this time of stress and strain, my brothers, I would remind all aspirants and disciples that there is no need for the sense of futility or the registration of littleness. You know, these things would get in the way of any positive work. The seed groups that will function in the new age are, at this time, in the dark and growing stage, and in the process of expansion, working silently. You know, the first part of the book gives quite a bit of attention to the seed groups, and even more in Discipleship in the New Age, Volume 1. They are discussed in some detail. All of us will find our work in connection with one of the seed groups mainly, and maybe some others, as they do tend to overlap. For instance, it's interesting that the chakras involved in those who fight glamour and seek to see reality and observe reality, those chakras are the same as those who are establishing the New World Religion. There are overlaps. And if we study the chakras involved, then we will see this, you know, right around page 39 or 40 of Discipleship in the New Age, Volume 1. Okay, so this stage of quiet growth, which is holding in this pre-blossoming stage, the methods by which humanity can be served along many lines. This stage is, however, most important, for according to the healthiness of the seeds and their ability to cast strong roots downward and to penetrate slowly and steadily upwards into the light, so will be the adequacy of their contribution to the new age which is upon us. Remember the Seed Group Project? It is 275-year project, and let's say that in a way it began with the great movements which occurred in 1925, and so by the year 2200 it will be coming to fruition, and many who were involved in this project as the Tibetan launched it will be involved again, and that includes, I would say, a number of us. I would emphasize that fact to you. The New Age is upon us. You know, not completely, of course, but upon us, yes. The Aquarian influence was growing even then and had begun centuries earlier, was fading in already centuries earlier. There's a 250-year overlap period for equinoctial ages, and there is a 2,500-year overlap period for still greater zodiacal cycles. You wonder if there's ever a 25,000-year overlap period for still greater cycles. The number 25 is strongly connected with humanity, and this is something that the rheologist Stephen Pugh has brought forward, has emphasized. The New Age is upon us, and we are witnessing the birth pangs of the new culture and the new civilization. This is now in progress. That which is old and undesirable must go. And of these undesirable things, hatred and the spirit of separation must be the first to go. Well, it's still with us. And the one great heresy we have been told is the great heresy of separateness. This is the great fault in perception. It's the major illusion to which humanity is subject. And love will greatly help us overcome that. I told you before that accidents to individuals are the result usually of an explosion of force, and that these explosions are caused by the hatreds and unkind thoughts and the critical words of those involved in the accident. Goodness, one thinks of the battlefields, the great battlefields that are operative and that have come down to us in history, and all of the explosions that are there found. Really, wars are filled with the venting of stored up hatreds. So we really need to learn, above all, our identification with those we are inclined to hate. We need to see our sameness, our essential spiritual sameness internally and in the realm of being that we share with those that externally seem to repel us, and we them and they us. Okay. The world situation today is not caused by the ambitions of any one person or race, or by the materialism, aggression, and pride of any nation. Now, that's interesting. You know, because obviously their materialistic aggression was very prominent in the German attitude and in the Japanese attitude. So what's he saying here? It is not basically the result of the wrong economic conditions existing in the world at this time. It is caused entirely by the widespread hatred in the world, hatred of people and of races, hatred of individuals and of those in power or of influence, and hatred of ideas and of religious beliefs. Now, that's one of those sentences that needs reminding. It needs us to reflect deeply. And, you know, for me, it's one of those sentences that I really don't remember reading. Aggression, yes. And wrong economic conditions, yes. These have been cited as causes of war. Materialistic attitudes, yes. But this is still more fundamental, still more fundamental. And I'll just read this again. The world situation is not caused by the ambitions of any one person or race, such as the German group or the Japanese group, or now certain religious groups seeking world domination, or by the materialism, aggression, and pride of any particular nation. And all of these existed certainly in Germany and Japan. It is not basically the result of the wrong economic conditions existing in the world at this time. And now he goes deep, and think about this. And think about your own attitude towards others and other groups. It is caused entirely by the widespread hatred in the world. At one point, I think he said, you know, the hatred in World War I was still more severe than in World War II, but I think it grew in World War II. Hatred of people and of races. We see that everywhere, in the rising Nazi groups in the Western democracies. Hatred of individuals and of those in power. Those expressing along the first ray are often hated, or of influence, and hatred of ideas and religious beliefs. Just talk to someone who is deeply entrenched in some illusory system of religious belief and propose something else, and you may well evoke the hatred response. Fundamentally, the world situation today, fundamentally it is caused by a separative attitudes. The separative attitudes of all peoples and races who, down the centuries and also today, have hated each other and loved themselves. This is deep. This is deep. And we have to think about how we have responded, how we have responded to differences between ourselves and others. Does it result in appreciation, understanding of the need for these differences, or does it result in rebuff and hatred? It is caused by people in every country who have sought to cast the blame for conditions on everyone except themselves. This projection factor, goodness, we see it operating in politics all the time, and who have diligently sought for scapegoats, whereby they may feel personal immunity for their share in wrong thinking, the wrong speaking, and wrong doing. Well, there's a lot to assimilate there, isn't there? And we have to see how we feel about our so-called enemies or the enemies of our way of thinking, the enemies of our groups, the enemies of our nations, classified as enemies, but are they really enemies? Where is the enemy? Perhaps on the vertical scale, we can say that at this time, the apparent enemy is the materialistic attitude, and that we need a new and enlightened form of materialism, or attitude towards that which is material, and that in the Aquarian Age, this can occur. The fact should be grasped and faced by all aspirants and disciples, including the members of the C groups. They are not immune from the prevalent failings, and many of them have sought to apportion the blame for world conditions and to criticize those who are seeking in their own way and fashion to deal with the situation. So criticism, what do we call it? He calls it that dire creator of misery. Clear thinking, a clear appraisal of causes, and a loving outgoing to all should distinguish all disciples at this time. I think we can see how, you know, even though we're reading of events that occurred in the 1930s, late 1930s, are very relevant. What is said is to us today. Where this attitude does not exist, there is ever the danger of absorption into the vortex of hatred and separativeness and the divorcing of the person by this, even if only temporarily, from the vortex of love. Now we see these hate groups forming on the far right. They have various names. They are oftentimes gathered around the idea that the white race is the superior race and all others are inferior, and the white race is threatened by the other races. Obviously, they have been cast out of the vortex of love into the vortex of hatred, and it is rising. It ever rises when there is fear. So this can spell danger and glamour when we are cast out of the vortex of love. And think about it, you know, think about your own life. Do you dwell in this vortex of love, wisdom? And when you see groups and nations handling things in ways that look antithetical to the way that you would operate, do you hate? Do you reject? Do you condemn? Do you criticize? Do I? So even aspirants and disciples fall victim to these wrong attitudes. So all this spells danger and glamour. The very fact that disciples are also pronouncedly individual intensifies their reactions, good and bad. So we need the group attitude to modulate our individual reactions. There's a kind of protection that comes with group distribution. He's talked about it at various times. Now, this is one of the sentences that tells us, it tells us how almost, I can't use the word helpless, but surprised DK finds himself in the face of the normal human attitude, even that of disciples. I stand almost bewildered. Did I not know and love human nature so well? At the little advance in loving thinking that some disciples have shown, We can really test ourselves there and think about the people we habitually criticize and dig deep enough to find out why this is the case. I stand almost bewildered. Did I not know and love human nature so well at the little advance in loving thinking that some disciples have shown? It is time now, in the face of the difficulty and seeming inadequacy, to begin the intended group work, if such a beginning is ever to be made. Well, he changed, you know, things changed, I suppose, with the invasion of Poland and the recognition of what the Nazis would do with their allies. All during the 1930s, there have been tremendous aggressions, not only from Germany and aided by Italy in a way, but in Japan in relation to China, just extremely inhumane aggression. So here it is, 1938, September 28th, beginning of Libra. If such a beginning is ever to be made, it's got to be now. Each group has been organized to fulfill a specific task, and this united group work has not yet been started, and that task must be begun. So going back to the early 30s, some of these, even 1931, the first C group was gathering. It was telepathy, and there had been internal training going on all that time, but the outer work had not been begun. And interesting thing is, within a year, it all had to be set aside because of conditions in the war and in relation to the Black Lodge, and a new organization, the new and reorganized seed group, had to take the place of the kind of specialized seed group work of which the Tibetan is here speaking. So he goes, you know, a little bit into the, how far did he get? I think only four groups. He only organized four groups, although he laid out the plans for others. The first group was the telepathic communicators. Group one can telepathically influence leading people and speak to their minds so that they may be impressed with the need, which has been described by one of the great ones as the loving salvage of the world. We don't know who said that. Could be Master K.H., you know. It's along his line. We're not sure. They must be led to realize that their policies must be determined by world good. Even today, so very few think in terms of world good. The success that the group had in helping, and then that's left blank, indicated their ability to be constructively useful, and maybe it was one of the leaders, who knows, in the United States or in one of the allied countries, perhaps. We just don't know, and the Tibetan has his reasons for leaving the blank there. Now, group two, remember the observers of reality, the those who seek to dissipate glamour. Group two can work, if they are willing, in a constructive fashion to end some of the world glamour. Now, some of us are trying to do this now for a few years, and many people have been using the formulas for many years. But here in the Moria Federation, we're putting a new emphasis upon it, and pretty much weekly we are reading through the book and using the formula to help dispel some of the really obstructive glamours, most of them based upon the great heresy of separateness. So ending some of the world glamour, this they can do because several of the group members have successfully fought glamour in their lives. And pretty well, you know, you have to find participants in these groups who have succeeded. Otherwise, there's no example, and there's no appropriate vibratory note to which the others can also attune. So some of the members of these groups have to be quite successful in the areas that the group tends to assist. Group three, that's the healers, healers in the New Age. They can begin group healing under direction once certain interior adjustments have been made. So DK had this group organized, and all of his students, I can't say they were all in these particular groups. Some of them were being reserved for other groups. He began to organize the political workers group, but by the time he had to change the format entirely, only three had been brought into the political workers group. And then group four, the educators in the New Age, they can attempt to aid in the building of the world Antikorana, working, of course, in group formation. This is so that humanity could access the higher thoughts and impulses and the wisdom of the high spaces. This they can do if they divorce themselves as individuals from all separative ideas and learn to work in the spirit of love and with a conscious decentralization of their personality. So it does seem that there was a combination of readiness and quasi-unreadiness to begin this kind of work, but things, I think, got very intense from 1938 onwards, and a necessary reorganization was required, making the seed group of 24, in which not all were included. If there were groups of 9 here, there were 36 people. And in the C group of 24, it meant that new reorganized C group, that 12 people had to be left out of that effort. And DK explains pretty much why that had to be. There are, my brothers, weaknesses to be found in all the group members' personality tendencies, and errors exist, and the mistakes which involve primarily a man's own interests and his own internal life. How much do we sacrifice our own interests for that which the world really needs at the time? But these constitute no serious detriment to group work, for they can be overcome or rendered entirely superficial with a very little effort. Impatience with the results already achieved, a feeling of smug superiority, certain physical failings and personal ambitions of a superficial kind are present in several members in all the groups. Certainly, DK assesses carefully the material with which he must work. And in each group at this time, there is one member whose difficulties are of a more serious nature, because they constitute a true detriment to the group life, providing as they do entrance for forces which do most definitely hold back the flow of spiritual life and prevent the work of a group nature moving forward to accomplishment. In these cases, what can I do? He says, now, we'll take that up in our next program. It's interesting that we, in a group, may be the very source through which these inhibitory, obstructional energies can find inlet. So we must never find ourselves with an attitude of smugness, as if we are above reproach. Always we must ask ourselves, am I the source somehow of an energy which is holding the group back? So we reach page 65, and let's see, where are we here? We're beginning on page 61, so page 61. Okay, so this is the BGN beginning. And now I'll just carry this down. I'd like to keep going, but my own schedule is such that I just don't know when I will have to do other things. What can I do? Okay, so here is the Tibetan, and this is the end of program 2. Page 61 to 65. And we'll have here the trying to keep order here. Beginning program 3, EXHH, page 65 to whatever. And date, we're not sure whether it can be today or not. So anyway, I think you can see that although we are dealing with history, the history of 80 years ago, at the onset of the second phase of the Great War from 1914 to 1945, that what is said is relevant to us today. From my perspective, we are still in the midst of the Great War, which accompanies the transition from the age of Pisces into the age of Aquarius, and our efforts as participants in the era of the forerunner, and let's say conscious participants, is to keep that conflict between the dweller and the angel of humanity on the psychological, mental level, and not let it precipitate into a worldwide conflagration which has the possibility of setting humanity back so far that the whole process that has already taken some 21 million years would have to be begun yet again. Okay, we'll move forward, everybody. Thank you for your presence, and we will continue at the first opportunity. Bye for now.